It's a Friday, and that means it's time to visit with Ben Fredrickson, and these are Ben Fred Fridays, as always brought to you by our good friends Henderson and Watercutty. See what they offer. Criminal defense lawyers at stlcriminaldefense.com. stlcriminaldefense.com. No matter how big or small the offense, they can help you in Missouri and Illinois. stlcriminaldefense.com. Lots to get to. Ben Fredrickson of the Post-Dispatch, how are you, and good morning?
Good morning, man. I'm doing well. Hope you are the same, and hope you enjoyed that rare Cardinals off day. It's like they're like diamonds now. They're hard to come by, and I don't think there are any more. So I hope you got some relaxing time in.
Yeah, not many off days. I enjoy. I tell you what, I enjoy the non off days. I like to work. I mean, we had too many off days, so I like seeing baseball. And this is really, and this leads me into this weekend, which includes five with the Cubs and another doubleheader. It's so odd to say that the Cubs will not be in St. Louis this year, and the Cardinals will serve as a home team in a couple of these games at Wrigley Field. And now we have a stretch of a lot of doubleheaders coming up. So this is really kind of a gauntlet of a schedule, which it has been since the 17-day layoff. But
right,
this is really a tough portion of the schedule. But let's go to not only what we have this weekend, but taking two out of three against the Cincinnati Reds. So if you get through this weekend, I like where the Cardinals are at. It's going to get tough with the doubleheaders, but generally speaking, I kind of like where the Cardinals are at, generally speaking.
Well, there's certainly some things to pick at and groan about, but you really can't groan too much about where they are in the standings, considering what they've been through. I mean, I don't know what the heck is going on in Cincinnati, but that team has been a major disappointment. I'm one of the bozos who picked the Reds to win the division.
Me too.
And the bottom has dropped out there. You know, I knew their bullpen was going to be suspect, but I really thought they would hit around that, and they're not hitting. So, you know, and then they, you know, they get pounced on the pitching there, you know, this week by the Cardinals. So the Cardinals are doing what they've got to do in this season where everybody's going to get into the postseason. They're floating, you know, they're hanging around, and for a team that missed 2 weeks, that's not easy to do. So I think, you know, the schedule is going to continue to challenge them. They had a pretty significant blow here with Dexter Fowler being put on the injured list for who knows how long, because he really was the only performing outfielder offensively. So I think that's going to be maybe a bigger challenge than some folks realize. And, you know, the Cardinals, they've got some things they've got to figure out or try to. They've got, you know, Oviedo, I thought was okay, but not exactly stepping into that spot and being dominant. So, yeah, they've got some stuff they got to work on. However, they're there. And in the 16-team playoff, you know, they're looking like a team that's going to get in. I think if I said to everybody, you know, as the Cardinals were missing game after game after game for their coronavirus outbreak, that they were going to be in this spot, people would have said, okay, that seems pretty good. So that's where they are. Now they got to hold it. You know, it's going to get harder. You know, it's kind of one of those things that's going to get progressively harder, I think, the more games they play. You know, people, I know this is hard for some folks to believe. I about had to log off Twitter forever and throw my phone through the press box window when I suggested that before the team went to Cincinnati, they were looking a little worn down. And I heard from Peaks, oh, all they do is play a baseball game every day. It's like, okay, well, if it was that easy, then we'd all be playing professional baseball. And it is a mentally draining game, and it's physically taxing. And when they're playing like they are now with, you know, every day, sometimes a lot of times two a day, then they're going to have to really fight to keep sharp and also stay healthy.
They are. And so, as you mentioned, Dexter Fowler, that's a big loss. He was having a solid year, not a great year, but, you know, a very good year, solid year. So others have to step up. And we saw a couple of nights ago, game was on the line. It was O'Neill. It was Thomas. They didn't come through. That was in the ninth inning. I'm really curious, after basically kind of a three-day mental break, physical break for Dylan Carlson, hitting the reset button, see what he can do. But one of these young outfielders has got to step up for the St. Louis Cardinals. And maybe it's Harrison Bader, too. So, but, you know, somebody has got to step up and do something for the Cardinals offensively.
Yeah, well said. I mean, they're just, you know, they were the only team, I think, unless I missed one, I counted this up on opening day, that started the season with their three outfielders hitting 7, 8, 9. It's unheard of. You look across the league, you've got outfielders, they're cleanup hitters, or they're leadoff hitters, or they're 2, 3, or 5. You don't have outfielders, three of them in a row, stacked at the bottom of a lineup. And the only reason the Cardinals don't have it now is when they put Edmund out there, and he's not really an outfielder. He's an infielder who's versatile. But he's going to keep playing out there if none of these other guys do anything. They are playing with such a huge anchor on them in terms of that outfield offense. And the only guy who'd really been playing better, you know, than he did last season was Fowler. I mean, it was close before Brad Miller turned into Mike Trout. He was close to leading the league leading the team in home runs, if not tied for it. And it was a little bit of a different style, but some of that power was showing through, and he was kind of having a year similar to that first year that he had in St. Louis a little bit, which was, I think most people would have said that was a good season for him. So that's disappointing that he's now out of the mix, but now it's really about those internal candidates that the Cardinals talk all off season about. I mean, there were a lot of people, and you and I talked about it a lot, about, you know, hey, this offense had a lot of optimism cooked into it. And when you let Marcell Ozuna walk, you were banking on really some of that optimism turning into cold, hard production from some unproven players. And so far, they're not getting it. They're not getting it from Harrison Bader, who's had times where he's looked like he's figuring out, but overall kind of still looks like the same guy. They're certainly, I think the biggest disappointment to me has been Tyler O'Neill. Now, Lane Thomas, I'd like to see him play now, because he was hurt last year. You know, they had the hand injury that should kind of robbed him of a chance. And then this year, the coronavirus kind of robbed him of a chance. He's back now, and Tyler O'Neill has been given opportunity, and he hasn't capitalized on it. I understand the folks who like his projections. I understand, you know, how you can look at his power and some of his raw athleticism and dream big. But what I see is a guy who his OPS has dropped by 100 every year he's been in the major leagues. And, you know, the power does not justify the lack of everything else. And it's not there enough. He doesn't hit balls out of the ballpark enough to justify his other offensive flaws. So I'm ready to see a lot of Lane Thomas, and I'm ready to see a lot of Dylan Carlson. And I'm okay with Carlson getting off to a slow start. I think we tried to be realistic and warn folks that this wasn't the promotion of Albert Pujols as a rookie. I don't think the Cardinals want to be 2 years, 3 years into Dylan Carlson and have the same situation that they do with Thomas and O'Neill, where they go, well, we just haven't played him enough to really find out. Play him and find out. His defense is good. I like his composure at the plate. I think he's going to get this figured out, but you just got to keep giving him reps. And there is not anybody out there right now that is demanding playing time over him. This is turned into a long-winded answer, but that end of that game in Cincinnati, that end of that series showed exactly what the problem is. You know, Matt Carpenter is one of the least competitive hitters going right now. The Reds walk him to load the bases in a tie game in the ninth, and it was a good call because they were betting on the fact that they could get back-to-back Tyler O'Neill and Lane Thomas out, and they did exactly that. And you're left wondering, then maybe it wasn't a good idea to have Yadier Molina bunt, who had homered earlier in the game. And maybe it was, maybe Mike Schilt should have pulled one of those outfielders and plugged in Dylan Carlson for the at-bat. But there was no guarantee that would have gone any differently with Carlson, you know, and Tyler O'Neill strikes out on a pitcher on his eyeballs and Lane Thomas goes down. And that's their problem right now. It's very hard to be an offensively competitive team night in and night out when you're not getting very much from your outfield. And that's what the Cardinals have to figure out.
We have to remind everybody, we're brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, STLCriminalDefense.com, STL criminaldefense.com. Henderson and Watercutty. You mentioned the name of Yadier Molina, still playing so well, still playing at a high level, and so is Adam Wainwright. Man, oh man, was that start this past week on Sunday just electrifying with the 122 pitches, the complete game on his 39th birthday. Let's advance the story, saying that everything would go well for the remainder of this season, no matter how long it lasts for the St. Louis Cardinals. What do you think about the future of those two in St. Louis going beyond 2020? What do you think, Ben?
Well, it sure sounds like they are interested in doing whatever they're going to do together. It's kind of like a college basketball package deal, right? Sometimes that's easy to say when the kids are being recruited and not so easy to say when it comes time for commitments. I think the Cardinals want these guys back. I think it will have to be in a way that kind of makes sense with this post-pandemic outlook for baseball. I think the Cardinals would be very content to continue to do with Adam Wainwright what he's done the past couple seasons, which it's a relatively modest guaranteed deal with a ton of incentives that pay him a really nice salary if he checks certain boxes. And it sure seems like he's going to be on track to do those again this year. You can't say enough about what Adam has done from coming back and being the first starter after the pandemic shutdown, after the virus outbreak, to really just, saving the bullpen. And I thought the wheels were starting to come off a little bit during that four-game losing streak. And it kind of changed when he had that game. And I think he really sent a shockwave through the group of starters that say, hey, let's go out and match that. And that's what Adam Wainwright should do. And that's when you know he's at his best, when he's inspiring the other pitchers in that clubhouse. So you have to just applaud him. And Molina, I mean, when he came back from the virus, I knew we were going to see a charged up Yadier Molina for a lot of reasons. One is that he's playing for a contract. Two is that he knows his team is still within reach. And usually that's when we see him hit another gear, is when he's got something to prove and when he's playing for a team that might have a chance. I think that the harder maybe thing to figure out for the future might be Molina. I think this would have been one of those things, if the spring would have been normal, we probably would have seen his current contract ripped up and thrown away and put in with a new one that made sense for everybody. However, that opportunity got squandered by the virus and spring shutting down. They can't give him an extension right now, because they're going to want him to take a significant pay cut. And I think he probably realizes that he's making $20 million a year, although it's prorated this year. But there's the rules in the CBA that allow the amount of money you can take a pay cut in, but without becoming a free agent and hearing other offers. So I know people are worried to some degree about this, here's where I stand. There's always something crazy that could happen, and you can't rule it out. But I think at the end of the day, Yadier Molina wants to be here. And I think the Cardinals value Yadier Molina at his age more than other teams will. And I think the idea of them having Wainwright and Molina together, preferably, hopefully, when fans can get back in stands, I think that will be appealing. And I think there will be a short-term agreement worked out for both guys. But they're going to have to understand, if it gets down to money and if they're wanting guaranteed money over money that can be earned via incentives and performance, then it might get sticky, because I think the Cardinals, like a lot of teams, are going to be trying to financially be pretty conservative because of the pandemic.
It also, you have to say, they're playing at a high level. That's an aspect of this. And
sure.
And there's the legacy aspect of this. And when there's fans back in the stands, you know what? They're going to bring fans out. There's going to be people that say, we need to go watch these guys play, because we don't know if we're going to see another one like these guys come around very often. So let's go down to the ballpark and watch him. So there's a lot of things that go into this, not just, hey, this player means this on a spreadsheet. There's just more to it with those two players than I think most fans maybe realize.
Well, I think the Cardinals value tradition. They value legacy. Sometimes they value it more than some fans would like them to. Matt Carpenter's contract is not looking all that great right now. Part of the reason that was given was that they wanted Matt Carpenter to finish his career in a Cardinals uniform. maybe he doesn't, who knows, but that was a motivating factor in that contract. There's a reason that they brought back Adam Wainwright when he wasn't pitching this well, and hope that he did get back to pitching this well. So I don't think that's going to change. The wild card kind of is always going to be negotiations with Molina. He's pretty cagey about him. He respect and is a big thing for him, and he doesn't really like to elaborate on what he's thinking about stuff until it's time to sit down at the table. I mean, you remember when he signed his last extension, how really kind of tense that spring training got. It was the big question every day: is what's going on with Molina? Is he happy? Is he going to be upset if the extension doesn't come before they break camp? And eventually, I think it happened on like the last day, and it all worked out. And I think that's probably what happens here. But again, the wild card will be Molina, but it'll also be how the Cardinals try to make some changes based off of the information they have about their finances because of a season without fans in the stands. I'm also not, you know, who knows? Yachty and Wainwright say they're kind of are hinting at the idea that they're a package deal. But if Wainwright has a agreeable situation to come back, and Yachty decides to jump on something else in free agency, would Wainwright really not come back? What if the team Molina goes to isn't interested in Wainwright? I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there that would have to link up for that notion to be real. But I think we're probably out in front of our skis a little bit. I think they're probably going to strike a way to be back together in 2021. And based off their performance this season, that doesn't look like it will simply be an old timers tour.
Yeah, I would agree. This has been Fred Fridays, presented by Henderson and Watercutty, stlcriminaldefense.com. The Blues make some news. The Jake Allen deal. So really, by all accounts, everybody looks at Jake as being just a first-class guy. He heads to Montreal, wins a cup here, and the Blues are going to have to clear some space to try to bring in, a captain, re-sign him. So what did you think of the deal of Jake Allen?
Well, my first thought was that Doug Armstrong is not going to be slow to react to the offseason like his team was during the bubbled postseason. Army doesn't take too long to get going. This happened pretty fast. And he just, he's always got something shaking, man. So, you know, I'm almost hesitant to say, hey, this absolutely means they're going to bring back Petrangelo, because you just never quite know what Army's up to. However, I think that's priority number one. And I think that's why we saw the Allen trade. The Blues have, of course, think highly of Jake Allen. You can't say enough about what kind of teammate he was and what kind of man he was when Jordan Bennington kind of became the number one. He could have pouted. He could have demanded a trade. He could have been a bad teammate. A lot of people would have, and he didn't. He helped Jordan Bennington along. He played well when the Blues turned to him, and he was a consummate pro, and that's part of the reason the Canadians were interested in him to back up their starter. And it's fascinating. We're seeing the Canadians spend a ton of money on goalies in a time where Doug Armstrong, who has been a very big proponent of this notion of having a two goalie kind of setup in order to win, is saying, look, it might be something, a luxury we can't afford in a salary cap year that is that the cap didn't grow and we're stuck at $81.5 million. And it might be something that, you know, we just have to bank on Bennington, which is what they're going to do. And they're going to try to turn to Ville Husso, the guy who was ironically above Bennington on the depth chart before he became the guy in St. Louis during the magical cup run. So I think it's about a few things. I think you're banking on Bennington, you're creating opportunities for Husso, and then you're also saying we need some cap room if we're going to be serious about trying to bring back Petrangelo. And it didn't sound to me this week like they're just simply sitting on a Petrangelo announcement. I think those negotiations or the standoff before them is kind of ongoing. But if Army doesn't get him back, then I think now he can pivot and maybe go a different direction. He could go try to get some scoring help or something along those lines. I mean, part of the wrench that's been thrown in this offseason is the fact that Vladimir Tarasenko, who is supposed to get you about 30 goals, if not more, per year, is going to be experiencing another shoulder surgery. I think it's fair to wonder if a team that's offense is not their bread and butter might need to find some scoring power in some way, shape, or form. So I think bringing back Petrangelo's top priority. I think that's the right priority. I think if you're in a championship window You need your captain, the guy who's been a great, you know, kind of in between for Craig Berube in the dressing room, who's one of the, you know, better scoring defensemen in the league. He plays a ton of minutes. He plays a ton of shifts, and he's great on the power play. He's a rock for this team. So if you're talking about this group continuing, then I think he's a big part of it. If it doesn't work out, then now Army has a little more room to try to, you know, make something else happen. So just a little more flexibility. And I think you have to say it's a smart move. And you also have to say, you know, cheers and you know, happy trails to Jake Allen, who really, I think, showed us exactly the kind of guy he is. And it's not an easy thing to do what he did. And I think, you know, that Blues team was better for it. I think he was a big part of the reason they won the Stanley Cup because of his selflessness.
No doubt. I want to shift gears a little bit. College basketball. What do you think? I mean, do you wait until first of all, you can't wait. I mean, all the sports are watching each other and to see how it all plays out. I mean, that's clear. Every sport is watching each other and to see how the bubbles work, to see how they handle things, to see how broadcasts work, to see how they travel, every aspect of what's going on. But college basketball, it's not that far away, Ben. So how do you think college basketball may work? Because I'm really intrigued with SLU. I think they have a chance to be good. Illinois, really good too. SLU, Mizzou, better. You know, just on a regional front, I think it could be interesting.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. If SLU and Illinois are somehow robbed of their seasons, that's a heartbreaker, because I mean, Illinois might be a Final Four team. SLU, if they don't win their conference, that would be a disappointment with what they have back. And those are easy statements to make, with what we know about the rosters and, you know, the fact that some of those guys did not go pro. And I think they made the right call in coming back. They thought they were going to have a season to play for. We'll find out. I'll give college coaches credit. The ones I've talked to seem a lot more open to being nimble and changing things up and a lot more forward thinking than some of the football types, which were kind of just twiddling their thumbs, waiting to find out if they were going to play or not. We didn't hear college football talk about trying to maybe look at a bubble setup or what could they do differently. They just said, well, that won't work. Well, we never really heard why. I think college basketball is benefiting from the fact that it's smaller rosters. They could maybe explore the bubble, and they have. We've heard about maybe the idea of some regional bubbles or March Madness in a bubble. There's been talk of the NCAA maybe trying to, you know, market, you know, March Madness in a bubble, and maybe that could work. I think a lot of this is going to depend on what happens with college football. That is such a driver for all these sports that if they pull it off, I think there'll be so much more encouragement. Not if they pull it off. I mean, you have to make your decision before, but if it starts well, if it's not shut down before it gets off the ground or doesn't have significant setbacks, I think that would be even more encouraging. And I think that the idea of this regional kind of setup, maybe for some non-conference games, could be really, really well received. I mean, look, the sad thing is, Dan, I mean, SLU is an example of a team that has a great student section that gets energy in the building, and that's awesome. But there are a lot of teams when you turn on the TV across the country, they're playing in front of ho-hum fans or mostly empty stadiums. So I don't know that it would be a terrible product if they were playing without fans or playing in some sort of bubble, you know, tournament style setting. It would be like one of those holiday tournaments, and a lot of people watch those. So to me, what I would like to see out of it, hopefully, is maybe like a regional non-conference setup where we've got all these teams that never play each other but are within an hour or two from one another and they actually play. I mean, I would like to see, and I know you feel the same way, Mizzou and SLU, or, you know, put them in some sort of a setting where Mizzou, SLU, Illinois, you know, Missouri State, throw a couple Valley teams in and play a round robin just to get some games in a safe setting, and then figure out what you do when conference play starts, figure out what you do for March Madness. So there are people who are getting paid a lot of money to come up with these scenarios, but one of them that I hope could be happening is we see kind of like an AAU style setup where teams that never really play each other finally get on the court.
I think that'd be awesome. I would love to see it because people want to see college basketball, especially here locally, you know, with the city here, the SLU Billikens and what they have coming back. And you mentioned Illinois being a Final Four team. I've seen some people predict SLU maybe be having the talent to be a Final Four team. Certainly win the conference, but there's been predictions of SLU being a Final Four team. That's how highly thought of that they are. And it's not far-fetched to say that they get into the tournament, and who knows what kind of run they'd make in a normal season. So that's how good they could be this year. That's what makes this fun going into 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, so fingers crossed for college football, because as you mentioned, everybody's kind of standing around watching each other. It kind of reminds me of like my buddies when we used to go, you know, there's this little kind of high dive that we used to go swim in, and it's like we'd all stand around and see who's going to be the first one to jump. Well, college football is going to get forced off the rocks here in a little bit.
Exactly.
We're going to see how they land, and then I think some things will be made, some decisions will be made after that.
Good stuff as always, Ben. We'll catch you up next Friday. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll have plenty to talk about, I'm sure.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.